Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke, and I can't wait to hear the title.
Today, we're going to talk about factory farming, or I'll take my steak packed closely together and standing up to its belly in manure, please.
So. Oh, my word. I thought maybe we were going to read 16 tons.
No.
So, okay. Is there a song in there?
No. Let's hope not. It's a good
Mom,
country
take
western.
Take my steak? Oh, my gosh. That's disgusting.
Sell me a steak that's up to its belly in manure. It doesn't sound like a country western song. All right. So let's talk about factory farming. And typically,
as it applies to livestock, you mean?
Yeah. Typically, the term factory farming does apply to livestock.
It does?
Yeah, in most of the definite Wikipedia. And that's
that's a gospel?
That's the gospel according to this show anyway.
Okay, all right.
That's as far as our research goes, beyond Wikipedia.
No, I never look up in Wikipedia, so I can't say that.
But so factory farming really talks about essentially taking the meat production and the poultry and the dairy and all of those and concentrating it. The government doesn't like to call it factory farming. It has a negative connotation.
Well, they call it farm production.
No, they call it concentrated or confined animal feeding operations or CAFOs. CAFOs.
That's bizarre.
Yeah. Well,
you have to be able to read at a PhD level to know that.
It's a nice, and you get more money for having an acronym. So anyway,
Who gets more money?
Well, one of the things that we found, because there's a big disconnect between the logic of people and the behavior of people. And that's just a truism. We could have that on every show. But in polling, Americans say they want their animals treated well, treated humanely. About 94% of Americans, the other 6% are, I guess, I don't know, psychotic sociopaths. But they say they want their food to live free from abuse, cruelty, and the like. But
they're 90, going to eat them. They're
I know. 95% or better of all of the meat produced in this country is raised in factory farms that by its very nature is subject to that cruelty. And I don't want to focus. I mean, you may focus on the cruelty aspect. I think that
I don't want to because
over.
Here's the thing.
It brings you down.
Everything's going to... Well, tough, because the reality is if you eat meat, that thing is going to die.
It's cruel by nature. I mean, if you're going to kill something to eat it, you know, you can pretend it's humane, but it isn't. And I'm not criticizing it because I do the same thing. I mean, we're all hypocrites at some level.
Well, I'm not a hypocrite when it comes to knowing that things going to, you raise them to kill them.
Yeah.
Anyway, so instead of focusing on that, because now everybody's tuned us out because they don't want to know.
Debbie Downer again.
I think, no, I'm not being Debbie Downer. I'm just saying, let's be honest. Let's be authentic. Living sustainably is saying the truth. Mm-hmm. And that is that if you're going to eat something that's living and breathing, you're not eating it while it's living and breathing. It's going to die and somebody has to kill it. So maybe we should make it so everybody has to butcher something if they're going to eat meat. Anyway, what I'd prefer to talk about is the different labels that appear so we could be better consumers at the marketplace. So that could be anywhere. It could be at the farmer's market or the grocery store. But there are these designations that people can get to put onto their, some of them, like natural and organic, they have to apply and pay money to get. But some of them are just baloney.
Well, yeah. And
maybe those are baloney, too.
A lot of these, we're getting these labels because some people are saying, okay, I understand there's a certain amount of cruelty. There's a certain amount of negative aspect to eating meat. How can I lessen that? How can I mitigate it? So we get things like all natural or range, free range or humanely raised.
But wait a minute. So what we're really wanting is to know, did that animal have enough space? Did it have clean water when it needed it? Was it cool when it needed to be and warm? Did it have the right feed? And what is the feed it's being fed? Is it being fed a feed that would make me sick or is it a healthy feed?
So before we get into these terminologies, I think it's safe to say, and we've repeated this many times in this program, unless you're buying food from someone you know, when you go into your typical friendly neighborhood grocery store, supermarket, regardless of what it says on the package, they're probably
Probably not true.
Probably lying to you.
Especially when it comes to eggs, chicken, turkey.
And it may be technically they're not lying, but they are lying because they're trying to give you the impression of something that's just not true.
No, technically they are lying. Because
maybe not.
So
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
All right, don't do it because it's not healthy to eat that food.
Yeah, well.
So you can. This is what people do. They lie to themselves about what's the quality of this food, and they're feeding themselves food that makes them sick. And then they end up in a really bad position later in life or even in its youth. So here's the deal. If it says that it's free range, they don't have to prove that. Most chickens that are laying eggs are in a container that's only big enough for them to stand on a perch, and their feet actually grow to the perch. So the reality is these designations like hormone-free or no hormones added or cage-free, all of those things are probably not true because they're able to twist it, and there's nobody making them prove it. There's no standard that says, no legal standard that says you have to prove that these are true, that this is absolutely true. And there's no definition that says what is hormone-free or humanely raised or humanely handled.
Okay, so we have to accept, if you're a thinking person, that if you are buying food from a factory farm, it probably is not raised in a clean,
healthy
and non-cruel way.
Right.
So buy it from your local, someone you know.
But let me just say this too, is that there are standards, but there's nobody holding them to this. Through the ASPCA, you can go online and look up their standards, and there is a standard for every single livestock animal, including bison, that says how much space they need, how they should be treated, what kinds of things that should happen when they're alive and when they die. What kind of chemicals that are humane and not humane. And so these standards do exist, and they're really valuable because you're going to get more money for your meat or your eggs. You're going to have a better product over time for your family and for your neighbors and for whomever else you're selling this to. If you were to look at these standards and say, all right, which ones could I live with? It's not to say you have to do every single one of them, but which ones would give me make a better living for me or a better price for me by doing this and then advertising that with the word local. And to tell the truth about how that animal's being raised, people are going to buy your product over that factory farm that has the tractor up above it that shows it's an old-timey raised animal.
To give a sense of the scope of what we're talking about, in 1950, there were 5.6 million farms raising 100 million farm animals. By 2012, the number of farms had dropped to 2.1 million.
So 3 million less, than 3 million
less. Less than half.
Uh-huh.
But now they're raising 9.2 billion farm animals.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So you're talking,
not sustainable.
An amazing concentration
of
animals.
It's just not sustainable.
So some of the other products are problems. We've talked about the inhumane or unhealthy conditions these animals live in. But in order to concentrate that many animals together and keep them relatively at least healthy enough to get through the life cycle before they're butchered, these farmers are...
That's a terrible goal, though.
I know. Well, you want them just...
Just to hang on long enough.
Hang in long enough to be executed,
hang in
buddy.
There, sucker.
That sounds like our criminal justice system. So anyway... The antibiotic use of...
Yikes.
Within animals have created a whole new version of superbugs.
Everybody, not just the animals.
So they're pathogen-resistant strains of these bugs. So to give a sense here, this is a big problem because 23,000 people die each year from food-related pathogens from these superbugs each year in the United States.
Like food poisoning and stuff?
Well, like E. coli and things of that nature that are no longer... can be treated by antibiotics.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are resistant to the antibiotic strains we have available to us. Now, we use about 7 million pounds of antibiotics in our medical industry. So there's a huge overuse of antibiotics in our medical industry, but that is dwarfed by the amount of antibiotics used in our agricultural system, which uses about 30 million pounds of antibiotics. And they use them in the absolute worst way they can use antibiotics. They use low dose, continual application of antibiotics to the animals when they're not even sick yet to try and help them with their growth, to try and help them avoid some illnesses. And when you use low-dose antibiotics, you basically create the perfect environment for these superbugs to develop, grow, and prosper. So
here's the thing, though. Try to be a little more positive, is that if we move away...
Okay, I'm positive there are superbugs out
yes,
there.
Yes, there are.
Killing us
and
all.
They're killing us. But if we say, look, as a small farm producer, I'm not going to create conditions where I have animals who live in a situation where they need either to grow too quickly, which antibiotics can help do, or to keep them alive because there's so much parasite activity because of how they're being raised. And to say, look, we're going to raise a better product. People are going to eat less. God forbid, they're going to eat less of this product, but it's going to be such a high quality that people are going to live healthier, so that's going to cost less. But the problem with that model is that the big pharmaceutical industry and the grain industries and all these other industries that support this big agriculture model are totally against it.
Sure.
But those of us who are on the other side of it say, look, we know we can produce a good product and we can do it in a way that's sustainable to the soil and to human beings, because we're going to die in droves from the fact that we cannot withstand what's coming at us from these things that have been created by these 10% of these farms that are making all the money.
So, yeah, in addition to the fact that you're developing superbugs that are going to kill you, the food is kind of crappy.
Not kind of.
Sometimes
you can't even tell if it's potatoes or cabbage.
Well, or fish. So,
yeah.
Also, these large-scale systems that produce crappy food at a very low price squeeze out the farmers who are trying to use better processes.
Yeah. So you said that the stats say that for every monoculture farm that comes into existence, 10 small farms
sure.
go away.
Well, and you talk about like the story of stuff. You like to reference
I love
that.
The story of stuff.
And that's the externalization, avoiding the true costs.
Yeah. So, and globalization.
Yeah. So when you get a large factory farm that externalizes the medical impact, is subsidized.
Meaning it passes it on to everybody else instead
right.
of taking responsibility. It's not
so
the true cost.
Yeah. They don't actually incur the true cost of what they're doing. So they don't pass that along. So the consumer, when he buys inexpensive hamburger at the grocery store or inexpensive chicken, they're not paying the true cost of producing that chicken or the true cost of producing
right. to the environment and to people.
And medical.
Right,
yeah.
To anything. But I just want to say that the story of stuff is that there are lots of little versions of that. Now it's a little cartoon kind of thing that you can go online and look up that really simply explains what we're talking about when it talks about globalization, which is a big word that you go, what does that mean? Or this externalizing of costs to everybody. It's a great way to look at it.
Okay, well, you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And after this show, I say thank God.
Thank God. All right.
Yes.
So we're talking about factory farming and the impact. And again, factory farm typically is referring to meat production. It can be aquaculture, like the growing of fish and shrimp and those kind of things. But it's basically
taking. Do they grow fish and shrimp?
Oh, yeah. Most of the fish and shrimp.
That's called growing?
Yeah, aquaculture. Sure.
I didn't think
there
it was
are fish
growing.
Farms and shrimp farms and things like that in big lagoons, and it's really horrible.
No, I get that, but I didn't know they were called growing.
All right, now you're just getting into some.
All right, but here's the deal. So factory farms get around a lot of this from the pollution standpoint, and also their poor operations. And the other thing to say is that the workers themselves are often ill-treated and develop all kinds of illnesses and stuff from some of the conditions. But factory farms are labeled agriculture rather than industrial, even though the USDA does call farming an industry. And because of that, designation of being agriculture, they're exempt from the typical regulations that a commercial operation of that scale and waste production would normally warrant, like you were talking about lagoons with all the poop in it and everything. Whereas the lagoons could actually be something, a good thing. They could be a good thing in terms of producing a tea that has a slurry that could be used for fertilizer, but instead it just becomes a health hazard.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a problem.
And it seems to be a problem the government is determined to make worse instead of better. So if there is going to be a solution to this, it really doesn't appear that government is going to be that solution. So it really has to come from individual decisions, individual practices. So let's solve the problem.
Yeah. So let's talk about if we talk about globalization versus economies of scale. Explain economies of scale.
Well, economies of scale is an economic term that basically says larger systems can produce each item at a lower cost per item because there is an economy of scale. It's like if I'm going to produce one, widget, they always use widgets or whatever, it may cost me $5 to produce it if I'm only producing one. But if I set up a system where I'm producing 1,000, I might be able to produce them for $2 each.
But this is a bad thing because then produce 20 million toasters and maybe only 5 people want to buy it.
It may be a bad thing for society, but it might be a good thing for that individual who gets...
Well, I know, but this is the problem. We're not thinking about how it impacts everybody. We're just wanting people to get rich.
Man, they'd flunk you right out of the MBA program.
Well, I don't want to be in the MBA program. I have my own business
model. It's all
about
maximizing profits for shareholders. Didn't you know that?
No, and I don't believe that. I think it's maximizing profit in terms of all kinds of profit, not just how much cash you're showing on a book somewhere.
Well, and once again, that gets to externalized costs. You know, it's like, okay, the corporation may make a lot of profit, but they've now pushed a lot of problems out there to the rest of us.
But that's been happening all along. I mean, look at the coal industry. But I don't want to wade into that.
Our society is based on the externalization.
Yeah, it's colonization. That's all we've been since the beginning is a colony. Anyway, so what I want to say, though, is that if we are trying to be good business people, farming is a business, whether it's animal, livestock, food production, whatever that is, it's a business. And it's sort of like a not-for-profit kind of thing because we've lacked the ability to make a living. And so what I like to talk about is how we might take this idea of fair treatment of animals, the idea of small production, of local production, of feeding yourself and your neighbors, and put that all together and say, all right, what's out there that could support this that the government does have that we could utilize? And so one of the things that the USDA has, and in USDA.gov, you can go to that site. They have a lot of information there, digital radio station. They send out an email every day if you want to sign up that says what's going on. Sometimes you can't understand what the words mean, but sometimes it's totally doable.
If you could understand, it wouldn't be a government site.
Well, I guess so. So somebody who speaks English as their first language doesn't review it or edit. But anyway, so they have a new program that's been rolled out maybe for the last year and a half or so, maybe 2 years, called microloans. And so this would be a sort of like picking and choosing. And I'm going to talk about a couple of different programs. So this program, the microloan program, is a direct you either are a direct farm owner or you could be a direct farm operating owner. So that doesn't mean you necessarily own the farm, but you're the operator. And you can go and get a microloan. And so the loans are very low interest, and they are for things like making a down payment on a farm. Well, think about that. That would be a new farmer and with a business plan, and you can find out a simple business plan. You can go to the USDA and see a simple business plan. You can work with groups like Women Grow Ohio that have, you know, webinars on that kind of thing. Also, you can get microloans for build and repair and improve things on the farm. You can also improve farm dwellings. You can get money for a solar array, soil and water conservation projects, down payment for farm ownership loans. You can do some kinds of joint financing. Can buy
tools.
And
you said these are part of the microloans, which
yes,
by definition are for small farmers.
No, for a small amount of money. It's not for small farmers. It's small amount of money.
Well, I wouldn't imagine Monsanto is going to go borrow $1,000.
Yeah, no, but farmers that are doing thousands of acres could still qualify for this. So if they're looking for fencing, hoop houses, which are very popular, actually the government has, through another group that's part of the USDA, the NRCS, which stands for National Resource Conservation Service, has a program for hoop house that where it's basically no cost. You just have to be able to install it yourself. They have money for loans for bees and bee equipment, milking and pasteurization equipment, maple sugar shack and processing equipment. So these do imply that they could be smaller operations. And they also have money for livestock purchase, seed, fertilizer, land renting, in some cases family living expenses for like a new farm operation, and irrigation. So all of these things are really great additions, you know, to be able to go and get a small loan. And you can either work through a bank and the Farm Service Agency. So Farm Service Agency, which is F as in Frank, S as in Sam, A.gov. That's a branch of the USDA.
So you're saying there are programs out there if a small farmer wants to take advantage. But we still have to create those markets for the small farmers' products, which are typically going to be a little more expensive than these big factory farm, you
right.
know, higher quality, and it's not going to kill you. But those are secondary concerns.
Well,
I want it cheap.
Well, here's the thing, though. The USDA at least is paying some voice to, some verbiage to this idea of supporting these farm markets. And so there is money that's been made available over the last couple of years to expand those farm markets.
So they have some programs like with agricultural products, not necessarily meat and dairy, like CSAs. But are CSAs expanded out to meat and dairy as well?
Yeah, they can be in eggs. And also through organic certification. I mean, the government, the USDA, will reimburse up to $750 for some farm operation that wants to convert to organic. So one of the things that I talk about is I don't understand why farmers that produce a lot of hay don't convert the hay to organic, because a lot of times they're not spraying, nor have they sprayed that hay for a long, long time. So they could double the price they get for the hay just by going after that certification. So another group that I like that has some really good programs is this NRCS, National Resource Conservation Service. And they have programs where you have to pay a certain amount of a match, but you apply through something called EQIP. And you can get money for fencing, money for water collection. I think that's big. Every farmer should be collecting water off the roofs of their buildings. They also have some conservation programs that allow you to set aside different parts of your farm for different reasons. And there's a lot of good educational information about pasture rotation and soil development. So even though there are a lot of things I disagree with in terms of government programs and the debt focus and all that, I think as small farmers, we can go to these groups and say, let's be smart about our business plan and let's see what's out there that we might join with others and do, or that, for instance, rural development has a lot of community development money where you could work with other farms. And let's look at things like microloans and not get ourselves caught up in things like crop insurance and things like that.
Okay, so that helps out the farmer who wants to go out there and become a producer. Where am I going to get some of this good food as a consumer?
Okay, so in one word, we got it, local. So we talk about this every single time we do a podcast or a radio show. And the reality is we have people around us, whether it's a farmer's market or a food stand somewhere, a vegetable fruit stand. We have the ability. We don't have to go to a major supermarket to find these things. And in fact, most major supermarkets are not going to provide us with healthy food. They're going to provide us with these commodity foods with lots of plastic threads and things in the food that's just going to make us ill over time.
It strikes me that this and Big Ag and Big Energy and all these other large infrastructures that we've discussed this before, where in the post-World War II society that's developed around the globe in industrialized countries, government stepped in and said, we're going to provide big systems. And in our case here in the U.S., agriculture became one of these big systems that became industrialized. These systems are breaking down because they do a pretty poor job.
Well, they've already broken down. That's right. The problem.
So the counter to this is always people will come back and say, this is necessary in order to feed a growing population with all of these. I think all of our research shows that's nonsense.
Right. We're doing globalization, so we're exporting.
Yeah.
We're importing food that we already produce here. It's crazy.
I mean, food production is by its very nature, and it should be inherently local.
If we want healthy food, yeah.
Food that's produced by you, for you, and for your immediate neighbors. And that works here. It works in Malawi. It works in Ghana. It works
in South Africa.
Canada.
It doesn't matter.
You know, we don't need Arthur Daniels Midland to be exporting corn to, you know, some country that doesn't necessarily want the
corn. Or even need it. So here's the deal. We are not supporting farmers. We're not supporting livestock farmers or food farmers. And the statistic that we have is that for every $4.69 box of cereal, our farmer gets 5 cents. So if we're not supporting that farmer growing the food that we want to eat, not the food that's being offered to us, then we are totally broken as a culture. So we've got to get out there and find these people and support them and buy food from them. And lots of people go on trips. They go out of the city to little places. They can easily go to a farm once a week and get food, or they can work with their neighbors and create a system where somebody goes. They do this with milk all the time when they want raw milk. They go, and one person they exchange each week to go get the milk, and they have a cooler, and then somebody brings back to a central location the milk, and everybody has their own jars that were filled, and they get what they need. So we can do the same thing with food production.
And we just have to stop buying into the myth
that
Big Ag and factory farms are necessary, because they absolutely are not.
Yes.
Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We want to thank our producer, Adam Rich, and thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully probably understood and said, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, which is what we're talking about. And Jay, please, please, please eat your vegetables.
I will. Till next time.
Mother Bye. Earth will sing and her children will be healed. Come out, see the morning glory, blossom in the night. Know the skies are dancing.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.